and welcome to another edition of Back Porch Bluegrass. I'm your host, Paul Trenwith, and if you stick around for the next hour, you'll hear not only some very interesting bluegrass music, but I have in the studio with me one Keith McMillan of Keith McMillan Stringed Instruments. Hello, Keith.
Good morning, Paul. How are we doing?
Oh, pretty good, thank you. I'm going to interrogate Keith and find out just what's involved in repairing and making your favourite instrument work much better and be much more playable. We're going to talk about that, as well as Keith's mandolin playing in the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band and in Irish bands and whatever else we choose to talk about. So I think it's going to be good fun.
Yes.
Got a couple of tracks sorted out because I'll be playing some music in between that have got interesting mandolin and things in there that you might like. So I hope you like what I've got sorted out.
Cool.
We're starting off with Hot Rise with Tim O'Brien. And isn't he a good player? He's a great player. And this is from their album Take It Home. Came out about 1990, I think. Nick Forster on bass, Tim O'Brien lead vocals and mandolin and guitar and fiddle as required, Charles Sawtell on guitar and some lead vocals, and Pete Wernick on banjo. But this next tune's got a great mandolin start to it.
I saw Hot Rise back in 1982 in Louisville, Kentucky,
and
they just blew me away. I think Tim is the most imaginative and musical mandolin player that I've ever heard.
He is. And well, we're going to hear this is early Hot Rise, and it's going to be good. The first tune is called The Bravest Cowboy, which is a neat name. Let's have a listen to it.
I am the bravest cowboy that ever trod the west. I've been all around the Rockies, got bullets in my breast. Been all around the Rockies, got bullets in my breast. In 1863, I joined the immigrant band. We marched from San Antonio down by the Rio Grande. March from San Antonio down by the Rio Grande. I went out on the prairie, I learned to throw the line. I learned to pocket money, but I never dressed so fine. I learned to pocket money, but I never dressed so fine. When I robbed the cowboy, how happy I did feel. When I robbed the cowboy, how happy I did feel. I wore a wide brim white hat, my saddle too was fine. When I caught a pretty girl, you bet I caught mine. When I caught a pretty girl, you bet I caught mine. I courted her for beauty, for love it was in vain. They carried me down to Dallas to wear the ball and chain. Carried me down to Dallas to wear the ball and chain. Got bullets in my breast. Been all around the Rockies. Got bullets in my breast. For my mind, I fear that my heart couldn't live without your love. So I'm bound where the wild river rolls. I'm bound where the wild river rolls. I'm bound where the tall pine trees grow. The cost of your love, there's taking its toll. So I'm bound where the wild river
That's Hot Rise, and that song was called Where the Wild River Rolls. Some nice mandolin. What did you think of Tim O'Brien's mandolin playing, Keith?
Fantastic. Can I tell you a funny story about Hot Rise? This was in 1982 in Kentucky. And after the show, I was buying records, as you did then, and I was standing around in the Hot Rise tent, and I saw all these records for Red Knuckles and the Trailblazers.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, man, that looks interesting. And I bought a couple of them, and the Hot Rise guys promptly started signing them, and I said, hey, wait on, what are you doing signing that record? And it wasn't until later on I realised it was kind of an alter ego band. And I think I was the only person on the continent that didn't know.
That's funny. Well, that's very good. I'm glad that you found out.
Yeah.
Did you see Red Knuckles play eventually?
Subsequently, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, they're fantastic too.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, I'm involved in much of your musical endeavours, but you're the man that fixes up guitars and instruments, and those of us who play whatever it is, guitars, violins, basses, banjos, mandolins, need to have it working properly, and you're a bit of a miracle worker with some of these guitars. Now, so we'll start out. I've got a fairly ordinary guitar, not expensive, but not cheap, and it's like hard work to play. And so Paul Trentworth has just told me to take it in to see you and see what you can do. What's the process?
Well, we first of all look at whether it's nice and easy to play, and it usually isn't, because that's how most new guitars come out of the shop. So the process is a quick assessment. Usually the truss rod in the neck needs a little bit of adjustment to make the neck nearly straight, not quite straight, but nearly straight. Second adjustment is at the nut, which is the white thing with six grooves in it up by the tuners, and usually, almost invariably, that's kind of too high, and so we groove those down with special files. And then finally, we look at the height of the bridge saddle and bring that down to whatever's appropriate for the player. And normally...
How do you mean appropriate for the player?
Well, as a beginner who's struggling a bit, we'd put perhaps a gauge softer strings on and go for quite a low string height, just so that they don't have to have a war with the thing every time they pick it up. But then on the other hand, someone, you know, like yourself, who plays hard and demands clear tone, would be using slightly heavier strings and a higher bridge saddle.
Right.
So that we do measurements at various parts of the guitar, but basically it should be as high as it needs to be and no higher.
Yeah. Are they constants like the height of the nut, is that a constant for every instrument, or does that just vary a little bit depending on the way the instrument's
It's pretty much a constant for every instrument, apart from perhaps someone who wants to do bottleneck playing or slide playing.
Oh, okay.
Generally, yeah. There's absolutely no advantage in having it too high.
Right.
Maybe a hair too high. So that.
But when it's too low, they all buzz.
When it's too low, the open strings rattle. And you
what do you do that. Then?
Well, we can do some tricks. If it's just one string, put in a special filler, which is, you know, as hard as it needs to be. Otherwise, we'll take the whole nut off and either replace it, or sometimes, you know, on a cheap guitar, we'll just shim it with a thin piece of wood.
Yeah, right, okay.
But the main thing is that it's solidly mounted and glued in place, and, you know, because it affects the overall tone of the guitar for every note on the guitar.
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever it is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So every guitar, regardless of whether it's a $200 one or a $2,000 one, can be made to feel good to play?
Yep, almost invariably, unless it's really got problems, but... You know, can always go back to the shop if that's the case.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Now, when you've got a battered old guitar that you've had for 40 years and someone gave you or something like that, said, I don't need this anymore, and you think this is worth fixing up, should we bring that to you?
It's always worth a look.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never charge anybody just to have a look and tell them what I think.
Yeah. And once again, you go through the same processes, but because the guitar's been beaten around a bit, the neck's suffered 40 years of heat and cold. And
The thing that happens after 30, 40, 50 years on an acoustic guitar is that the neck angle gradually changes, so that the neck kind of appears to stick upwards a little from the body, and that's usually... kind of terminal in terms of getting a low action. You do what you can.
Right.
You know, you can compromise all the other adjustments a little to try and make it playable, but often that's kind of the end of the road.
Yeah. But some people may choose to get the instrument back into line because it has a nostalgic value of some sort. It was their dad's or...
Yes.
Something, yeah.
In which case, you know, there's various... things you can do. There's nothing that money can't fix. And a neck reset is, you know, every two or three times a year, I guess I'd do a major neck reset on a guitar. That involves steaming the neck out and correcting the angle and then gluing it back in, and that might be $1,000 worth, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's worth it on that guitar.
If it's worth it, it's worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And the idea is just to make the instrument as playable as possible so that you can get maximum enjoyment out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, the whole point of the exercise is to enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah,
you
know, right.
You've got to buy a guitar that makes you go, oh, every time you open the case and look at it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no good that it sounds wonderful, but you hate it. You got to like to look at it. You got to like to listen to it.
Yeah, everything. Okay.
Yeah.
You do other instruments as well, and it sounds silly that you do the same things to a violin as you would to a guitar, but they must have standard things, because I've seen some violins or fiddles that are atrocious, you know, and impossible to play.
A very similar range of adjustments on a violin, except for... one of the things you always need to check for is the solidity of all the glued woodwork, because they're put together with animal glues, which, you know, have a limited life. And every now and then you need to re-glue something. And then inside the violin is a thing called the sound post, and that requires adjustment.
That's a little bit that goes from the front to the back.
Yep, looks like a meat skewer when you look inside, more or less just under the treble side of the bridge. And the adjustment of the sound post is absolutely critical.
Yeah.
You can transform an instrument from being mediocre to fantastic just with moving the sound post a millimetre and perhaps making it slightly tighter or looser.
Yeah. But you've got no adjustment on the fiddle neck. You know, you can't tighten up a truss rod or anything like that. Much of knowledge you'd probably like to. But
they're relatively short and fat and robust. A
bit like me.
Yeah. And me. And in fact, if it has taken a bit of a bend, all you need to do is unglue the fingerboard and straighten the thing as you glue it back together, and it's good for another 100 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you... someone like me who's not a fiddle player, it finds it hard to tell a good instrument from a very good instrument. I can pick an awful one, but do you get people bringing in surprise instruments and they're very good, or they're usually very bad? Or
usually very bad. You know, it's, I frequently get instruments that, you know, the family has regarded as special and valuable and at least hundreds of years old, and, you know, they turn out to have been made in Czechoslovakia in 1959. And but there's some pretty nice surprises too.
Yes, yeah. What other sorts of work do you do on guitars? Occasionally I see, you know, nice-looking Martin guitars in there, and I think, what's that in here for? It looks perfect.
Oh, minor finish problems, and sometimes the binding at the edge of a guitar might come loose and that can be glued back in place. I have a Martin guitar that just came in yesterday where the neck appears to have moved, so I'll investigate that.
Yeah. How will you tell? I mean, apart from standing there and
just... I'll figure it out as I go,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, well... look, if you've got an instrument and it's not behaving as perfectly, or you think that if the instrument was better, you'd play better, well, Keith's a man to go and see, because he does do those adjustments, I have to admit it. Now, I know you're a mandolin player and you're dead keen on mandolins. Having made your own and play a very nice Gilchrist as well.
Yes.
This man, John Reichman, and his band, the Jaybirds, from British Columbia, they play some fine music. I saw them at one of the Grass Valley festivals that I went to, and they have a lovely band. They really do some nice stuff, and John Reichman plays a very nice old classic Gibson mandolin.
Oh, I'd love to look at it.
Yes. Yeah. This is the one you often see on albums coming, particularly coming out of the West Coast, where, you know, thanks to John Reichman for the loan of his mandolin for this album. So yeah. He's got the mandolin that everyone likes. Yeah. So let's play a couple of tracks out of there. What have I sorted out? The Jaybird song. He calls his band the Jaybirds, and this is the Jaybird song, and then one called Mississippi Hoedown. I'll tell you a little bit about these, because first off, they give us some information. The lead singer is Trisha Gagnon. She's great. John plays mandolin. Jim Nunnally plays guitar, and where else? I want to get the names right. Anyway, they write a lot of their music, and they wrote the Jaybird song because they studied up on that. That's part of their name. Mississippi Hoedown, there's a note here. Sometimes sound checks take 10 minutes. Sometimes it takes 10 hours. Sometimes the sound man gets stuck in traffic on his way to the venue. This tune came to John during a sound check at a great venue in Portland, Oregon, the Mississippi Studios. Ironically, it wasn't even one of the longer checks. But while you're waiting for them to find a sound on the mandolin, you're often... sitting there, and a tune comes, and this is one of those tunes. So that's the second of the ones that I'll play. We'll start off with the Jaybird song, and then hear Mississippi Hoedown from John Reichman and the Jaybirds.
Standing by my window, and what did I see? Jays beneath the walnut tree, gathering at a store in before the snow did fall. Listen, can't you hear those little jaybirds call? Take my hand, come walk in the valley. Hold my hand, come go along with me. I went out on a mountaintop, and what did I see? Five gray jays looking back at me. Storing before the snow did fall. Listen, can't you hear those little jaybirds call? Take my hand, come walk in the mountains. Hold my hand, come go along with me. I what did I see? Five scrub days as happy as could be, gathering and storing before the snow did fall. Listen, can't you hear those little birds call? Take my hand, come walk by the river. Hold my hand, come go along with me. While out in the garden, what did I see? Five blue jays, blue as they could be, gathering and storing before the snow did fall. Listen, can't you hear those little jay birds call? Take my hand, come walk in the garden. Hold my hand, come go along with me. What did I see? Five pinion jays, busy as could be, gathering and storing before the snow did fall. Listen, can't you hear those little jay birds call? Take my hand, come walk in the forest. Hold my hand, come go along with me. Take my hand, come walk in the forest. Hold my hand, love, go along with me.
Pretty nice mandolin playing.
Oh, I wish I could play like that.
Oh, it's just flowing. There's a magic in there somewhere where you can get to the point where your hand just flows out over the notes, and yet you're still getting the full value out of the note. You know, you're not appearing to play the note short because you're trying to get to the next note quickly.
It's
a duration kind of, thing,
and it's relaxed. Above all, it's just such relaxed playing.
I know. Yeah. I don't know quite how they do that, but yeah. You get the same thing on banjo. Mandolin, I'm a hugely frustrated mandolin player. I should have started learning when I was 15, I did banjo. Because I listen for those things, I know what I'm trying to do, and I can teach mandolin, I can teach the picking, teach the up and down, teach the strokes, teach the chords, teach the rhythm and everything else like that, but I can't play it well enough.
You play pretty good, I think.
Yeah. But mandolins used to be an absolute challenge. You either got a Gibson mandolin or you had a horrible one.
That's true. And I remember back in the 80s, my first decent mandolin was an Ibanez model 524 or something like that. And actually, it was pretty terrible. It was too thick, too heavily built, and I didn't have a decent mandolin until I bought a Gilchrist, and then I built a mandolin.
Which is a pretty good way to get a decent one.
and the mandolin I built finished up being finished at the same time as I got the Gilchrist, so suddenly I had two quite good mandolins. And they were exceedingly thin on the ground, but speaking of mandolins, just lately I've had the pleasure of having several really nice mandolins pass through my shop. One was a Kentucky that evidently escaped from the factory via the back door without any sort of name on it. But, you know, looking at it closely, it appears to be a Kentucky. And then there's another mandolin that legitimately was a Kentucky that I bought and sold a couple of months ago. And it is stunning. It is. Yeah. It's a $1,500 in New Zealand dollars mandolin.
Wow.
And you wouldn't believe you could get a mandolin that good. And then a couple of days ago, I had an Eastman mandolin belonging to one of Paul's students pass through. And once again, I was just blown away.
Mm.
It's not as good as $50,000 would buy, but man, it's close.
Yeah, well, I've noted even further towards the bottom end, you go in and you can get like the Stag mandolins for about $300,
yeah,
which are the little A-shaped, which is the pear-shaped mandolin,
yeah,
and flat back and nice neck. They're quite playable and they sound quite good.
They're all solid wood and they sound amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's easy to learn. Mandolin's one of the most versatile instruments.
People buy them
for, you know, Irish bands and for folk groups and for rock groups sometimes, as well as bluegrass.
The tuning of a mandolin, which is, as the musicians out there will know, in fifths, so that tuning across the strings happens on the seventh fret. The tuning is the same as a violin, and there's something about that tuning that makes it particularly intuitive for your fingers to just go to the note that you were thinking of.
I don't think I've reached that yet.
I reach it just on occasion, and but it only happens on mandolin. If I pick up a guitar, and you know I'm not a bad guitarist, but the notion of kind of improvising on a guitar just hits this brick wall where my fingers just don't go where my brain tells them to go, and that sort of does happen on a mandolin.
Okay, and also on a fiddle because of that.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and I guess that tuning has evolved because it does suit melody playing.
Yes.
Kind of more so than chord playing, though chord playing on a mandolin's perfectly easy, but not as easy and versatile as a guitar.
Whereabouts is your shop?
It's in High Street in Frankton and Hamilton. Work there 5 days a week.
Yep.
Don't expect to find me there on a Saturday.
Yeah,
I'm at the beach. Yeah.
Yes. And so Keith's shop is a good place to go to. He's got his beach there, and he's always got a guitar, you know, and doing open heart surgery on some instrument on the bench, and that side room where there's a few instruments, a lot of secondhand instruments. There you do a bit of a back and forth with people.
I buy and sell a few, and a lot of new, you know, guitars and mandolins and stuff for sale, and some banjos.
Yeah, well, we're fortunate in Hamilton because we've got a couple of great music shops, and you're pretty familiar with Shearers.
Yes.
Yeah, very familiar with Shearers. That's where I first got my banjo in 1965.
Wow.
We're really cool. A Framus banjo, I bought that. Their sponsors are Back Porch Bluegrass, and I'm really delighted that they are, because they're big sponsors of Waikato and Hamilton music. And if they also have a big range of instruments and sell their tend to be sellers of instruments and providers of things like that, whereas Keith, you're more likely to take your instrument to and have the neck straightened or the bullet holes taken out of it or something.
Yes. Shearers is where I got my first mandolin in about 1968 too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you remember, was that the Ibanez?
No, it was some, didn't even have a brand. It was a plywood monster with a pickup on it. I'd heard Hamilton County Bluegrass Band on the TV.
Oh, were they any good?
No, they were quite good.
Yeah.
They should have stuck to it.
Yes, it would have been good.
So I tore off down to the music shops to find either a banjo or a mandolin, and they didn't have a banjo, but they did have a mandolin, and so...
And that was... The die was cast. It's as simple as that, folks. Yep. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Bill Munro played mandolin because he had brothers and they'd taken all the other instruments. You know, so another one turned out to be a guitarist, another one was a fiddle player, and another one was something else, so he was left with mandolin.
Yeah.
And so he invented a music to go with it.
It's a funny thing, though. When I was a little kid, we used to go along to the Caledonian Society dances, me and my family, because my father was Scottish. And I kind of noticed that the world was divided into on-beat people and off-beat people.
Yeah.
And I was definitely an off-beat person.
Is that even right?
Yep. I could relate to the backbeat of the music, not the downbeat of the music. And just it was clear to me as a 10-year-old that that's how the world was.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay.
We're talking with Keith McMillan, and this is Back Porch Bluegrass, and we get to play a little bit of music every now and then. But Keith McMillan is a key person in the music scene around Hamilton, because he's the one that keeps your instrument working beautifully. And he's worked on all mine. My Baldwin banjo is probably due to come and have another, you know, 1,000-mile checkup or whatever it's supposed to have. And you fixed up my mandolin so it's playable. You fixed up my Johnson. You fixed up my Sigma guitar so it's possible. The Martin hasn't had any work for a while.
No, it's been well behaved.
I think you've done some stuff on Madobra. You fit pickups to acoustic guitars or acoustic instruments sometimes.
Yep.
Banjos, you do also. Banjos are very critical. I get students because I teach, and most will bring a banjo, and I say, well, I think you ought to take that to Keith and get some little spikes in the neck so you can capo up and do that. And that's such a precise job to do that it's ridiculous.
I think banjos are possibly the most misunderstood instrument.
Banjo players are misunderstood.
in the music shop scene, because the actual final adjustment of a banjo is critical to the sound. There's not a lot of leeway in the head tension and of course, the minute that you adjust the head tension, you change the string height. And then if you change the string height enough, then you have to change the neck angle.
And it's got those coordinator rods that do that.
And if you change the neck angle, that changes the head tension. So it's kind of, you know, it's a bit like chasing your tail. But when you get it right, a banjo is just a cracking good instrument.
Yeah.
But fresh from the shop, they're seldom right.
Yeah. No matter how well they think they're set up, yes. I have to admit that I've had students come to me with fairly economical banjos that they've got, and you've fixed them up and worked on them, and they've come back sounding a whole lot better than they should.
Yes. That's what we aim at.
Yeah, that's what you aim at, and that's good, but... Keith's advice when you're getting an instrument, and this applies to no matter where you're buying it, is always get the next one.
Yes. Avoid getting your first banjo in particular, you know, a cheap banjo is ultimately going to be a frustration in 3 or 6 months. And so this is advice I worked out really in conjunction with Paul, is skip the first one, just go straight for your second one, which might cost you $600 or $800 in New Zealand dollar terms.
The better the instrument is that you're playing, the better you'll sound practicing. There's just no doubt about it, and you've got the right, particularly with banjo, because you're looking for sustain on some notes, but you're looking for the staccato sound of good clear notes. You're looking for accuracy up the deck. You need all that coming out of your banjo, and some of the cheap ones just don't provide it.
Yes, and it's true of all instruments that if you've got a reasonable quality instrument, you're going to feel a lot more like practicing.
Yes.
But it's more true of banjos than all the other instruments.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're going to be at Kiwigrass this year? Next year.
Next year, yes, I certainly will.
Yes, Hamilton County Bluegrass Band is playing at Kiwigrass. Sort of the first of what's intended to be an annual event, Kiwigrass, on the first weekend of February. I've got a poster here which I better read from, and the best way to tell you about it is tell you to go to our webpage, www.kiwigrass.nz. Or if you're a Facebook person, go to facebook.com/kiwigrass and you'll find out all about the program there. There's 18 bands. We've got some great bands from New Zealand like Pippi Pickers, Hamilton County, Roadworks, Hot Diggity, Wires and Wood. We've got the Lonely Heartstring Band from the USA coming back again. Many people saw them about a year ago when they were here. We've got Bluegrass Parkway from Australia. They're sort of like the royalty of the Australian bluegrass music scene. And fantastic performers. 9 Mile Creek are coming. Crooked Road are coming from Australia. We've got a lot of visitors coming from Australia for the festival. Mm-hmm. They all think it'd be great to come to the first New Zealand big bluegrass festival in Hamilton. So it's going to be a great event. Go to the webpage and book your ticket now, because they're cheaper now than they will be closer to the event. So Kiwigrass is good. Hamilton County will be playing. Keith will be there. You're not going to have a tent or anything like that, are you?
No, I'll be too busy playing music.
Yeah, but everything sort of turn up to, someone brings you a fiddle or a mandolin and say, can we arrange to get this curried? It always seems to happen.
Yes.
I think I'll play one of your favourites now. I'm not set up for it, but we'll we'll sort it out and play some David Grisman. He did an album called Tone Poems together with Tony Rice, and it's quite special. It's not just playing music, but they selected instruments that were appropriate to the delivery of the tune. Okay, so I've picked out a couple of tracks here, and we'll see whether they've got time to play both of them. Good Old Mountain Dew is one of them. Good song, great song. And then I Am a Pilgrim. In Good Old Mountain Dew, they're playing 1931 Martin OM18.
Wow.
You wouldn't mind that, would you?
No.
Hanging on the wall of the shop would be pretty good. And then that's Tony Rice is playing that, and David Grisman is playing a Gibson A2Z, a 1924, which is a Lloyd Law A model mandolin, the pear-shaped one with an oval hole. Lloyd Law worked on this one, and it's a natural finish, and they reckon it's got a pretty good sound that's perfectly appropriate for this song. And then the next one that we're going to do, I Am a Pilgrim, these are the two classic instruments of bluegrass. It's a Martin D28, 1935 model one, and Clarence White. It's a Clarence White guitar that Tony Rice got. We played some Clarence White on last week's program. Slightly bigger sound hole. And David Grisman is playing a Gibson Lloyd Law F5 1923, which is sort of what everyone is aiming to get. And you'd play so many thousands of dollars for them that you'd do everything with an armed guard. But they sound pretty good musically. Let's hear these tracks, just the guitar and the mandolin. Thank you. This is Tony playing Clarence White's guitar. Well, that's got to be some pretty good playing there, Keith.
Oh, David Grisman was my hero for a long time, and I'm just looking at the liner notes that came with the CD, and it's Tone Poems, where there's a different guitar and a different mandolin for every track. Yeah. And on one of the tracks, Dog After Dark, there's a picture of a 1925 Lloyd Law F5 Fern mandolin. And I was just reminded that in 1982 I met David Grisman, and I kind of said to him, "Oh, hey, I've come to see you, really." and he just handed me his mandolin. This mandolin that's in the picture, the 1925 Fern, he just handed it to me, and I was expected to have my own pick, of course.
Yes.
As I did. We sat down and had a play, and I played on that mandolin, and up until then that was just the best mandolin I'd ever played.
But
a year later I got my Gilchrist, and I think the Gilchrist's equal to that.
Yeah, which is, and he plays Gilchrist too.
At the time he was actually marketing Gilchrists.
Oh, was
in the States.
Yeah.
So no, he was a very early convert to Gilchrist mandolins.
Yes, oh, that's great. Gilchrist mandolins, for those that don't know, made by Steve Gilchrist, who comes from Victoria in Australia.
Yes.
And it's wonderful to have an Antipodean instrument maker so widely recognised as him.
A couple of years ago, I played a Gilchrist, which one of the Davidson brothers had just bought. It was only like a couple of months old. And honestly, that was just exquisitely good. I'd have swapped my mandolin for that one in a heartbeat.
Would you really? And wow.
Fantastic. Just yeah. And the world is sort of thinking that that Steve Gilchrist is peaking at the moment. You know, he's kind of right. Old enough to have had all that experience, well, but not so old that he's in decline.
He is, yeah.
That's a terrible thing to say.
I know Mike Compton uses Gilchrist, doesn't he?
Yeah.
A lot of stuff, yeah. Okay, anything else you'd like to add? What have we got here? I need to tell you about our new website for Free FM. Here it is. Those of you who've had difficulty going to the Access Radio site to download the shows, you don't need to anymore. You can go to the new Free FM website, which is at Free FM, all in lowercase letters together, freefm.org.nz. And it's a very friendly site, and you can just click on the show that you want, or click on latest episodes, which have just been uploaded. Or if you click on the All Programs knob, you then select the show that you want to download, which is, of course, Back Porch Bluegrass. And clicking on that will give you about the last 10 shows, and you can download them. So it's much easier to get around. And you can also see what else is happening on Free FM, as well as Back Porch Bluegrass. And so much easier to download than it used to be. So you can carry on with your downloading or your live streaming. It's good. I hope you continue to enjoy it. I know that we get around the Access radio stations in New Zealand, up and down, Kapiti and Otago, Christchurch and Wairarapa, for a few of them, and also Bluegrass Planet Radio in the USA, and a couple of Access radio stations in Canada, CFBX and Kamloops, and Voice of Bombay in Newfoundland. All good, all nice that you're listening to a New Zealand take on bluegrass music. Hope you've enjoyed our interview with Keith. We've got a little bit more to do, but we're going to play some music with Keith playing a tune called Hikawai Hornpipe, which is on the Hamilton County album. Tell us about Hikawai Hornpipe, Keith.
I sat down to write a tune, and this is what came out. Really, it wasn't supposed to be in this key, and it wasn't supposed to be at this speed, but it just kept resisting me. And and the tune is kind of reminiscent of back roads and, you know, hills and going, you know.
What's a Hikawai?
Hikawai is a location on the Coromandel Peninsula of New Zealand, and just had a nice alliteration, the Hikawai Hornpipe.
Okay, it's a neat tune. It's good fun to play. We do this tune, and Keith's playing mandolin. I'm playing banjo, and I thought when I heard it, I thought to myself, he's going to ask me to play a banjo solo on that one, and I'm going to have to get the melody right. And so I went away and studied up, and it took me a lot longer than you think it might have done to actually learn it. But it's a neat, fun tune to play.
It was very impressive that you figured that out.
Yes, it's a neat, fun tune. So here's Hikawai Hornpipe. I don't think it'll take us out, but we'll see what happens. If we've got time, we might play a bit of a song that you wrote called U-Turn.
Okay.
It's about life that, you know, it's a bit like life is like a GPS, you know.
Life is like a GPS. Don't believe what you hear.
It's always telling you to go a different way. Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much for coming in, Keith. Appreciate the time. You'll find him at his shop at 36 High Street in Frankton. There's always good parking outside. Take in your instrument, have it brought back to life again, and it'll rejuvenate your playing, believe me.
Thank you so much, Paul.
by 2:30, cruising along. The side road looks tempting, down it I go. Just a minute later, a voice that I hate. U-turn, when possible. U-turn, not possible. U-turn, could be rough, might be windy, but I'll go ahead anyway. And I'm tempted, it could be wrong. I'd do it, looks better going blissfully. A voice in my ear from somebody near. U-turn, when possible. U-turn, not possible. U-turn, could be rough, might be windy, but I'll go ahead anyway. We all need someone with good advice,